The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, with the start of the new season now, less than 2 weeks away, we're really ramping things up on this episode in part three of our J1 season preview with two of the league's heavy hitters and some other works in progress.
Yeah, this should be a really meaty episode. I think we should be able to cover top, bottom, and maybe middle of the league in this episode. And yeah, the league is getting ever closer. The 4:35 a.m. kickoff on Saturday, I could do with that another few weeks down the line. But yeah, we're almost ready to rock and roll.
Most definitely. And to help us navigate the next five teams in our preview, Kawasaki, Yokohama F. Marinos, Yokohama FC, Shonan and Shimizu. It's our great pleasure to be joined by Scott McIntyre. Scott, fantastic to have you back on J-Talk. How are you?
Benjamin, Samuel, I'm very good. It's very good to be with you. I think you covered last place last week. That's Avispa Fukuoka. I forgot to send you. I've got my full list, Ben, as I usually do on these preview pods, from 1 to 20.
Oh.
In order, exactly correct, as always, which we can go through later on if you want. No, it's great to be back. I've obviously been listening to the other pods. The J2, the Extra Time pod has been great. The Mother pod has been good. And the J-League has just announced today has stolen your idea of drinking parties as well, which I think some of the Extra Time boys have been involved in because they're doing this 24-hour live stream in the build-up to the opening round of matches, which does, I believe, include some kind of overnight drinking party. So that's, something worth joining into. And I do have to say that I just did open a beer as well, but I promise it's only one, not the three that got Mr. Kashiwagi and Mr. Sugimoto in trouble earlier this week down in Okinawa.
Right. Yeah, so before we get into our five teams, that is a little bit of a meaty news, as Sam suggested we might have on this episode. Maybe fortunately for Ryan Steele, because he's probably pulling his hair out at this news, but we obviously previewed Urawa last week in part two of our previews, but yes, Kashiwagi and Kenyu Sugimoto have been pretty naughty boys down there at the Reds training camp, and it looks like at least one of them might be on their way out of the club, and following almost certainly the Brazilian striker Leonardo.
Yes, Kenyu Sugimoto has somehow come out of this and gone from a fringe striker to a combination of all other things and now being thrust into a starting role, whilst Yosuke Kashiwagi has gone from probably what would have been a starting role, actually, if we were to believe some of the kind of rumours out of camp, to now being on his way out of the club. It was kind of announced tonight that the club is prepared to let him go. My understanding of that is it will probably be a loan, and it may indeed be outside of Japan, as he's banished to who knows where, all corners of the earth for apparently having a little session from 4 till 6. They booked out a restaurant, the two of them, in Okinawa, and it's come out that apparently they had a couple of beers, three to be precise. So it's not the gravest crime in the world, but it looks like it could turn out all right, actually, if he ends up in the Australian A-League. It might be three beers that were worth having for a summer down under. But, he's on his way out. Geez, who knows what's happening at Reds? Actually, I thought that'd be a lot better than they were. Yuki Abe has been made captain. It looks like he's going to be starting for them as well now. So they might have a season of struggle, but they'll be doing it without Kashiwagi. So you can imagine every club in J2, J3, J1, and probably some other minor leagues below that have all put their hand up to try and get him. But I wouldn't be surprised if he actually ended up outside of Japan somewhere.
Rightio, so yeah, just for a change, a bit of upheaval at Urawa, and so frustrating into the preseason for Reds supporters who were hoping for a much more positive year this year under Ricardo Rodriguez. It certainly hasn't got off to the best of starts. All right, before we begin again, I'd just like to extend a thanks to our questioners this week from Patreon. So to Thomas Pennington, Johnny Nickel, Gabrielle Anello, Stuart Woodward, Khalil, Eric, and Naoya Kanai. Thank you very much for your questions. And we'll be at least touching on all of them in this episode with Sam and Scott. So let's begin at the very top of J1, and last season's champions Kawasaki Frontale, managed of course by Toru Oniki, now into his fifth season with the club, and he's ended three of his previous four as the J1 champion. Put together, the greatest season in J1 history did Frontale in 2020. They set all sorts of records. Highest points total, 83. Goals scored, 88. And their 18-point winning margin were three of the most notable, while they also had an unprecedented nine players selected to the league's best 11. For their major ins, I could really only find one that I think is going to have a major impact on the first team, and that's Jao Schmidt in to cover for the loss of Hidemasa Morita to Santa Clara of Portugal. So Morita's obviously gone, central midfielder and one of those nine best 11 members that Frontale had last year. Of course, the club icon Kengo Nakamura retired, and Manabu Saito has transferred to Nagoya, but he's more of a name in the recent years than much of an actual asset on the field. Only made 21 starts and scored 4 goals in 3 full seasons with Frontale, though he did battle injuries, of course, throughout his time at Todoroki. I guess there are probably some other ins and outs around the fringes that the guys might want to talk about, and I guess we can debate whether they've added enough depth to go deep into the ACL while maintaining their league domination. But what are you expecting for an encore, Scott? Can they carry on from 2020 or perhaps even push the envelope a little bit further? Or is some regression inevitable with another big egg in their basket this year?
Well, some regression is inevitable because of the simply amazing season that they had last year. That's not going to be matched by them or probably anyone for a long, long time to come, even with extra points up for grabs with the two additional teams. This year, I don't think they're going to win, actually, the title. I'll give you that's the heads up in my 1-20 straight from the start. And purely because I think they're going to struggle with the ACL. We still don't know where that is. We know roughly it's going to be in some form of a bubble, but that bubble could actually well be in Japan as well, from what I'm hearing. But who knows what's going to happen with delays and lockdowns across the world and all this kind of stuff. So if we get a situation that we had last year for the ACL teams, where league matches are being shuffled about left, right, and centre, and then you actually have to go off and play these things, I think it's an absolutely massive distraction, and that's why I don't think any of the ACL teams this year will win the league. I think they'll do well, all of them, but I don't have any of them winning it, just simply because of the sheer unknown around the ACL. In terms of the squad, I think they've done actually very well. What they've done in recent years is hung on to a couple of younger players that have come through the system. They've loaned a few out to university and have come back into the system. Players that have come through the youth setup, been shipped out and then been shipped back in. Last year, they had quite a few guys out on loan. Keichinen has come back from Oita Ten Miyagi, was down in J3 with Toyama. And Daitono did very well in the promotion campaign for Fukuoka. They've also picked up one of my favourite players of the departed 27 million players that left Oita, and that was Mr. Kozuka in central midfield. I think it's going to be a fine squad addition. But, I think they've only got 29 players registered in the top team. But if you look at the depth, it's unbelievable. I was going through and trying to pick out a starting 11. I don't have a place for that in that 11 for Kobayashi, for Kurumaya, for Al Tanaka, for Hasegawa, for Chinen, for Kozuka. I mean, those players would be starters at pretty much every other club in the league. So if you've got that amount of depth sitting on your bench and probably being rotated in and out as per needs with the ACL and whatnot, I think they've got fantastic, obviously absolutely fantastic depth pretty much right across the pitch, with the one exception being, as it always seems to be in central defence, where I, by my tally, they've only actually got three kind of out-and-out central defenders. I mean, Kamiya, the young guy who came through the system as a central defender, has been and actually may start at left back in the first match through injury as well. And that leaves Taniguchi, Jessiel, and probably Yamamura, who's actually not really a central defender, right? He was an advanced player for pretty much most of his career. So if issues hit in defence, as they have elsewhere, the Cerezo actually lost a couple of players today and have just re-signed your great Murtha Dankler to fill in for those issues. So if it's that dire at Cerezo, who knows what's going to happen if injuries hit at Frontale. But I mean, other than that, the squad is absolutely superb. I think the ACL is going to be a problem for them, and I don't think they'll win, but I think they'll continue playing the way that they've played, really developing that fantastic brand of football. Having said, I don't think they'll win the league. I think they might win the ACL, actually. And, they've obviously had consistent struggles in that tournament, but I think the squad is deep enough now. Certainly the murmurings from within the team itself is that they really want to make that a priority and try and, you know, give it a good shake, particularly if the group stage is in Japan, which should be to their benefit. So I can see them going really, yeah, really far in the ACL, but perhaps not quite having enough to get up and win the league.
All right. Do you share Scott's opinion there, Sam, or do you think a year like 2020, which they handled almost flawlessly, has prepared them for what is likely to be a more hectic, but a more spaced out 2021, where they will have to focus on the ACL, which has been their Achilles heel in their the many appearances they've made in it, or do you agree, or do you think that they'll be able to handle everything with the experience of 2020 behind them now?
I think if any squad is going to be able to handle the ACL and the disruption that it's going to bring this year, it is this Frontale team. It was horrendous last season for Yokohama, Tokyo and Kobe, just because the league was like split in half. So you started in July rather than in February, really. So there was so little time for any sort of training, any sort of preparation, and then having to play those ACL games, plus all the rearranged games. So Kawasaki's kind of... their schedule this season will be fairly reminiscent of last year for them, in that they will have to play games every midweek pretty much, but last year they managed to cope with that pretty well. I agree with Scott that the centre-back issue might be a problem, especially they didn't really lose Jessiel or Taniguchi at all last year. There was only the one game I'd pick out was the Oita game that they lost, where Jessiel was suspended and they were really pretty poor at the back for that game. So you would worry if... a centre-back partnership of Yamamura or Kurumaya had to be in play for any length of time, and that could be an issue. But really, the depth in midfield and up front is fantastic. I think the signing of Joao Schmidt is a terrific one. It's freed him from Ficadenti. He's going to have a lot of time on the ball at Kawasaki. He's going to be able to show the qualities that he does have when he's been kind of restricted for the last couple of years. And then keeping players like Mitoma, I mean... And he may leave in June. You might see him go to Europe, but they've got him for the time being. They're going to have to make the most of that. And then, the squad players that have come in, I like Kozuka. I didn't really play too much at Oita last year for one reason or another, but to have him as a backup, a terrific player. And I want to see a bit more of Diatono, because he had a very good season for Avispa, but he's going to have to play that third striker role at Kawasaki, which is quite difficult, because they're going to start, you'd say, with Damian, and then Kobayashi is the alternative there. And then Tono is not going to have much game time in a similar way to Miyashiro, so it's just how can he deal with that 10 minutes he might get a game, or maybe even every other week. And so can he make an impact there? That's the only... There's one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing. But I think Kawasaki, if anyone team is going to deal with this schedule and stay on top, I think it's them. And I've been flitting between Kawasaki and one other for my for top in my J-League prediction, so I'm not completely against Scott with that. But if I'm going to put my head on the block and I'm going to say Kawasaki going to retain...
Who's the one other?
Kashima.
Well, do you want to know who I've got at number one?
Yeah, go for it.
Kashima.
Excellent. So we're on the same.
We've got the same two, at least just in a different order. I think Diatono's actually been in preseason playing as a right winger, so you might end up getting a run up there. And from what we're hearing, there has been a few injury concerns. We should say that preseason has been spectacular, as you would imagine. They saw off a few lower tier teams without many issues, and then put a 14 past Sapporo at the weekend. It was one of these odd kind of matches that went on for half the day or whatever, but they won that match 14-3, so they've been in fine form. But Oshima and I think Ianaga have picked up knocks from there as well. Nobody Zato is probably not ready for the start of the season either, so they do come into things with a few little concerns, and I'm sure you get onto it later on, but meeting Marinos in that first match is I'll tell you my number three team, and that's Marinos as well. So, if Yokohama did, for example, win that opening match, it could set the season up nicely.
Well, Oshima's injured. You're joking. I can't believe it. All right. Well, I did want to touch on F. Marinos and any comparisons we can draw with them. Obviously, they do have their own part of this preview coming up next, so we don't want to linger on them especially too much. But, 12 months ago, Sam, we were sitting here pondering a possible F. Marino's dynasty after they stormed to the title at the end of 2019, playing some irresistible football, as Scott obviously had predicted that they would and was correct in a spectacular fashion. Obviously, Frontale won the league in totally different and indeed totally dominant fashion last year. Are there any comparisons at all we can draw? I don't know, perhaps with motivation or with, or is it just simply an ACL issue you see that could be holding them back from doing a similar again? Because, obviously, F. Marino's title defence went tits up fairly quickly. There are obviously a number of caveats attached to that, but how likely are Frontale to fall on their face as much as F. Marino's did last year?
I think it's entirely schedule-based. If the schedule gets on top of them, if they get injuries, then that's the only reason why I think this Kawasaki team would drop. I think that's really the only reason that Yokohama dropped as they did last year, because I think it was impossible for any team to win the league with that schedule last year, especially a team like a Postecoglou team, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a little while, but it needs a lot of it needs time on the training field to get the exact, the kind of niches right in that Postecoglou system. So bringing in new players, when things aren't going quite as well, they didn't have time to deal with that. So I think they were always going to drop off. So I think Kawasaki, the schedule is going to be tough, but it's going to be nicer than it was last year. So I don't see them dropping any lower than second. I'll put it that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one season under Oniki that they didn't win the league, they sank to the depth of fourth. So, they're obviously not going to fall off the face of the earth, are they? But, I find it hard to look past them. And obviously, an 18-point margin over second-placed Gunma Osaka is, simply incredible. But, of course, all teams start with a zero at the end of February. So a couple of questions from our patrons, Scott, from Thomas and Naoya. They both mentioned the ACL in their questions. So Thomas's was, about the ACL campaign impacting their domestic responsibilities. Given the announced bubble has no set location, and obviously the deadline, I think, was the 15th, wasn't it? So if that's passed and we don't have any concrete news yet, then that the rumours of no countries at all bidding might have been true. So Thomas is wondering whether we could see a similar fall akin to the ACL 2020 teams. I think we're kind of agreement that won't be the case, that they won't be slipping out of the top six anyway. I'm just curious because, obviously there are more games when you're in the ACL, but the fact that, like Sam said before, the season last year was literally cut in half, and the way that things are going to be spaced out, yes, they will have to play a group stage in a bubble, but, I mean, apart from that, they will have a proper rest for pretty much the rest of the year, won't they? So, for me, that is slightly overblown, I think, the concerns about the ACL schedule. I'm a little bit more worried about their motivation.
Yeah, well, I mean, we need to remember that there are two extra clubs, so that's there are actually extra league games going on. I agree that not as crushed, but I also concur with what Sam said, is that we simply don't know what's going to happen, but we know that probably something's going to happen. I mean, there will be games that are rescheduled. If the ACL group stage does happen to be in Japan, it's an unbelievable advantage and really aids Kawasaki winning the league. If not, I mean, we heard some kind of suggestion that Australia would put their hand up to host it. If it was then, say, for argument's sake, to be in Australia, where quarantine is very strict, there's no way around it. They would need to go in for 2 weeks before they play the actual tournament, right? So, 2 weeks, if it's another, whatever, 2 or 3 weeks in the thing, then, some kind of issues coming back. I mean, you're pushing towards 2 months just for the group stage of the ACL. So if I was the J-League, the JFA or whoever makes these decisions for the benefit of Japanese football, for the benefit of the league season, and certainly for the benefit of the clubs in the ACL, I would be doing everything in my power. It makes sense. I think it makes sense to host one, if not two, of those stages down in Osaka, where you've got two clubs. You could potentially do more and bring Frontale down as well. And if it did end up in Japan, as I think it might, then it changes the equation. But if it's overseas, particularly in a country where they have to quarantine, unlike what happened in Qatar for not an extended period of time, then even with with the squad that they have, and that's just knowing what we know about the way that the ACL is going to be organised. But if you've got other issues domestically, as we saw last year with games being rescheduled, where one team has an issue here or there, some players are out having three cups of beer at a restaurant and whatnot, who knows? So for me, if I was betting on this or doing it for the J-Pred prediction, which we hope is coming back, I just can't have any of the ACL teams winning it because there's just so many unknowns that the other clubs don't need to face. The one positive is it was announced today, Ben. They received a gift from some local farmers of 100 packs of strawberries, 30 kilograms of strawberries.
Oh, terrific.
So at the bare minimum, they're going to be well nourished.
Very good to hear. And yeah, it's a good mention for Richie Palmer's J-Pred. Hope that is coming back before the start of the season, Richie. Looking forward to that. All right. So, Sam, do you want to handle Naui's question then? It was more about their approach in the transfer market. Naui says they took a restrained approach, mostly opting to pick up some unheralded players or some that have obviously come back from loan while striking some big salaries from the payroll. Are there any surprises in store for either the league or the ACL? I guess, talking about the size of the squad. And also, you mentioned, F. Muddy Nose and the importance of them getting enough time to train under Postecoglou. Is it Kawasaki, are they just doing it all on memory these days? Or Nicky can just roll the ball out and they can just play like in a well-oiled machine? Is that what was behind a large part of their success last year, that they are so familiar with their roles that the lack of practice time wasn't such an issue for them?
Yeah, I think it's still quite an expansive system that they play, but I think it's easier to get to grips with the way Oniki plays, and they've been playing this for a while. It's not like he changed the system dramatically from even the Kazama days, so it's kind of inbuilt into them, but the Postecoglou system does take a little bit more time to get to grips with. So I think they're just kind of going on as it was. They've not made many changes to the squad. Schmidt will play fairly similarly to the way Morita played, and everyone that comes in kind of knows the role that they're going to have to play, so they've just kind of kept it simple. So I'm not really surprised that they didn't go out and make major changes. I would have expected one extra centre back just to come in as a bit of squad depth, but otherwise it's not really surprised me. I think the players that they've brought in, your Kozakas, your Sukugawas, those sorts of players, they're just going to add the squad depth that you're going to need for a condensed season and maybe for some of the ACL games when you're playing the less heralded teams, let's say, in a group game. You might want to throw those players in. So I think it's just a continuity thing that they've done over the transfer window. And yeah, it didn't surprise me at all.
All right. Well, yeah, I don't know how you go about topping the greatest season in J1 history, but I'm sure Kawasaki will be wonderful to watch again this season. And spoiler alert, yeah, I've definitely got them top in my preseason table. It's just impossible for me to look past them. But, one team that is now perhaps a dark horse to shoot back up the table after winning the league in 2019 is Yokohama F. Muddy Nose. So we'll move on to them now in their fourth season now under the stewardship of Ange Postecoglou. To say they've been up and down in his three previous seasons is an understatement. Of course, betting in his methods in 2018, they finished 12th, just 2 points above automatic relegation and level with 16th placed Iwata, who went into the promotion relegation playoff. Of course, famously champions in 2019 when they won 10 of their final 11 games in an unbeaten run that saw them sweep to the title. Before that run started, they were fifth, 9 points behind FC Tokyo, having lost three straight games to that point. So then they went 11 unbeaten and won the title. And for so many reasons, they slid down the table to ninth in 2020. They didn't win consecutive games until match day 12, and the best they could do towards matching that run at the end of 2019 was a run of four straight wins in mid to late September. They limped home though, lost five of their last six league games, obviously with the ACL in Qatar looming on the horizon. They were the second top scorers in the league with 69 goals, but only three teams let in more than their 59. They were obviously very easy on the eye at times though. They scored four or more goals six times, famously smashing FC Tokyo 4-0 away. And then in their final home game, they thumped old rivals Urawa 6-2. So, Scott, how much of a reboot is needed after 2020? Are they back to square one or maybe square three or four? I don't know. Or are they just hoping to do a Men in Black memory erase and pretend that 2020 never happened?
Well, there's a lot of metaphors for me to get through there, Dan.
And, you're welcome.
As I'm sure we've discussed offline, I don't agree. This is really a divergent, but I don't agree in the concept of acting. So therefore, I don't know any actors. I honestly, hand on heart, I couldn't tell you more than five actors, and they're only ones like Johnny Depp who get into trouble, you know, when they bring their pets into countries before Corona lockdown and get in scandal. So the Men in Black, although I recognise the name as being a movie, I've never seen it.
All right. Well, most of the listeners probably understand the reference. So, we can.
But it's lost on me, so I don't know where to go with it.
All right. Well, are they just going to pretend that 2020 never happened?
Okay. Now I'm following you. I don't think it's back to square one, because with Ange, there is no there's no one square, two square, three squares, and the squares are constantly shuffling around. We'll get into a question on tactical evolution, which certainly they've been doing in pre-season in a minute. But there is no, I mean, there's a settled philosophy in terms of how they want to play, but the way that philosophy is implemented is vastly different from season to season. I'm really excited to see what they'll come up with this year, which I'll preempt that question a little bit. But they've basically been playing a 3-3-1-3 formation, which to my knowledge, not many J-League teams have played before. So just how that works out is going to be very curious. But this is what he does. He's an innovator. It's no surprise to any of your listeners that I'm a huge rat for Postecoglou. I think he's one of the leading coaches in world football. Let alone in a Japanese or an Asian context. No matter what, they're going to be a fascinating watch, as they always are. We know that they're going to score a lot. They're probably going to concede a lot. The good thing for me is they got pretty much all their work done early in terms of transfer business. I'll give you a game, Ben. How many outs do you think Marinos have had in this off-season?
Well, if
how many players are out, this includes transfers and loans.
If Moba J is right, it's 25.
I've got a 24. So that's basically an entire squad that they've simply shipped out. A lot of those, probably half of them, are out on loan. But it's absolutely an astonishing amount of players to have gone. But in terms of the in, I've only got, I think, six kind of ins, and four of those have come from a local high school team. So if you want your kid to play for Marinos, get them to the Kokoku High School down there in Kanagawa, because that's the breeding ground. One of those players actually has been brilliant in pre-season this summer, Kawayama, a central midfielder / left winger who could even be a sneaky starter, I would think, in week one. So straight from high school, into a team that won the league 12 months ago, which is another great reference for Kokoku High School. Get your kids down there. They did work early. They did it, I think, well. El Bear, although I believe he was injured late in the last camp they've been on, so he may not be right to go for the opening match, which may open the door for young Kabayama to start. The other one is the curious case of Leo Ciara, who is not yet in the country due to COVID restrictions, but who played for Ryukyu back in 2015 under a different name, where he was known as Sam. What was he known as in 2015?
It's a terrific question. I have no idea.
I believe it was just Leonardo.
Okay,
so he's gone back to Brazil, and he's come back and apparently been doing very well. I think he's the second highest scorer in the second division with Vitória, 15 or 16 goals for the season. He's come back with a new club and a new name, and if he gets in and clears quarantine, as expected by whatever 4 or 5 weeks into the season, you would think would be the player to start up front in this. Yeah, quite unorthodox new system. So I'm really fascinated to see how they line up. The indications from preseason, he's given not only Kabayama, but another one of these boys from Mark It Down, Kokoku High School, Takato Minami, who's been playing as a kind of a right winger, who's also been starting for them in some of these warm-up matches where they have been, as you would expect, impressive as well. They played three games and won all of those fairly handily using this new approach. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited to see how things look.
All right, Sam, what did you make of their transfer dealings then? And obviously we do have a couple of questions kind of related to those. Obviously, Tomoki Iwata came in from Oita as well, and Daisen Maeda's loan was turned into a full transfer from Matsumoto. The outs, obviously Park Il-gyu's loan was made into a permanent transfer to Tosu. Edgar Junior the same for Nagasaki. So I'm not sure if Leo Ciara is going to be the new Edgar Junior, Scott, or whether he's actually going to be any good. Eric and Junior Santos, the quirky stories about them, although I think the question about those two was specifically for Scott, wasn't it, Sam? So maybe we can hold off on answering that. But, yeah, your general thoughts on the... On the transfer dealings, an enormous amount of outs compared to ins. But yeah, if Scott's right, then it sounds like there's some real quality coming in.
Yeah, generally I share kind of the intrigue into Yokohama. I think the most important signing might be Tomoki Iwata. If they're going to go to this three at the back system, though he's obviously well used to it. At Oita, played very well there, and for Japan occasionally he's played at Copper America. I think he played there as well. Yeah, so I think if the I'm not 100% sure on how this system is going to work, as Postecoglou can change it at any given moment. But I imagine Iwata in that right centre-back role is going to be very important, both in attack and in defence. And it'll be interesting for me to see what Thiago Martins, who I imagine will be the left centre-back, how he can adapt to that role, and if he's going to be as comfortable at day one as Iwata will be. So, yeah, that's interesting to me. I think I've got an issue in goal. I think they're best goalkeepers now at Sagan Tosu, and they've got four goalkeepers there that are all
five on the books.
Yeah, four that are about the same. That's what, and then Tagawa's there as well. So they've got an interesting debate about who's going to start, because Obi looked like he was becoming like that number one goalkeeper last season. Then he had that Champions League game, which was a bit of a nightmare for him. And it kind of looks like Takeoka's overtaken him again at the start of pre-season. But even so, all three of them, I think, have got issues, especially when they're going to play the way that Postecoglou does. So I still don't think they're going to be watertight at the back. I'd also say Kida, if he doesn't play and hold in midfield, I don't necessarily trust Ogihara. So I still have defensive issues with Yokohama, but I think they're going to be really exciting going forward, as always. And yeah, Kabayama has been kind of the standout of all these kind of rookies that you come into the league this season. He seems to be the standout guy. And I think with Elbert injured, I think it was this weekend he got injured, and it looks like maybe Kabayama does come in, so that is exciting. But yeah, I was just wondering, Postecoglou played this three at the back, a sort of three at the back system at when he was the Australia manager. Do you think he will resemble that with this tactic at Marinos, or do you think they've got different players at Marinos and will have to tweak it some way?
Well, they played three at the back at various points in the last couple of seasons as well. You know, when he wasn't happy with things, they did shuffle things up. But for me, the way that it looks to be structured, you've got the three central defenders, then you've got two advanced kind of, I don't know what you can call them, I guess, kind of wing-backs in a sense. The basically only one kind of holding player, and then you've got four kind of out-and-out forwards. You would think that Marcos would be the point of those and then Nakagawa on the right, this Elbert on the left, and then eventually Ciara through the middle. So it's just unbelievably aggressive in terms of, you know, we don't know because we haven't seen it. We're only reading reports. But in terms of, yeah, what I understand to be the positioning behind it, it's just incredibly advanced. So you've basically got six, you know, the two, I guess we call them fullbacks, wingbacks, and then the four players up front. So, I mean, in essence, you could have almost, you know, I mean, essentially six forwards, right? So yeah. I think even more so than the first year, I think they're going to be absolutely thrilling. I think they're going to concede an absolute bucket of goals. And I think they're going to score, particularly when Sierra comes in, an absolute bucket of goals. And they could challenge whatever the mark was that was set a couple of years ago when Gumbel went down and they scored some kind of record number of goals, or whatever. I think they're going to be absolutely amazing to watch. I don't think the consistency will be there, and I agree with Sam. There are certainly concerns in goal. Just in the fact that you've got five keepers. That's almost more than the entire number of transfers in the off season. But they're going to be super super exciting to watch. I love the tactical innovation that comes every year. One of the few coaches in Japan that tries it. I'll take a bit of an issue, Ben. You said that Frontale resembled nothing what Marinos. I think basically Frontale copied a large part of the Marinos blueprint in what they did last year. Certainly, the tactical adjustment to the 4-3-3, the basic template was very similar, I think, to the way that Marinos won the league. And Ange looked at that and said, okay, I'm going to see what you did and I'm going to up you and I'm going to do something completely different, completely unexpected, a way that no other club is playing in the league from what we understand from preseason. And it's just a fascinating situation where Japanese football fans are so fortunate to be presented with such, you know, consistent drive and innovation. And I'm absolutely fascinated to see how it's going to play out.
All right. Well, it does sound to me like, yeah, it's not back to square one, but it does sound maybe they're back to square three or four, because if every season he's going to implement a new system, then, yeah, he's going to rely on his players to take to it and actually implement it out on the pitch. So, yeah, it will be fascinating to watch, but I'm sure they will definitely take their lumps. And, I don't know whether they'll be closer to first or ninth, but you're definitely more positive that they will be right up at the sharp end again. I guess I'll need a little bit of convincing, but, yeah, I'm fascinated to see how they look. All right, well, let's get the Eric and Junior Santos question put to bed then. It came to us from Stuart Woodward, and I'm fascinated to hear what you know about the backstory as well behind it, Scott. So Stuart asked, do you know why Eric and Junior Santos weren't able to be retained? Ange spoke of losing, in inverted commas, them in a press conference, and it appears that both players would have been happy to remain at the club based on their farewell messages. What do you know about both of them leaving? And Stuart goes on to ask, is there enough goal-scoring potential without them? It sounds like you're in the affirmative there. So, yeah, what do you know about the reasons why Eric and Junior Santos weren't kept on?
Well, if I was on $40,000 a week, I'd want to stay on as well. The short answer is both were on loan. both were returned and then kind of sold on in both cases. Eric was a good player. Personally, he was a little bit inconsistent, and Junior Santos, from my understanding, had some kind of out of body experiences during match day rather than what he was actually like on the training pitch. So both have been replaced by what it seems on paper to be players of equal quality. Elbear has come straight in on the left for Eric, and this Leonardo / Leo Ciara has come in up front to replace Junior Santos, and these. And signings were in place, my understanding of it is, long before the end of last season, as in September or October. You know, these deals were kind of in place. Obviously they have access to a fantastic scouting network at Marinos, and Ange knew the players he wanted long before they were actually signed. I'm pretty sure he knew that the loan deals weren't going to be able to be extended or converted for those two particular players, and I think it was as simple as that. I don't think there was any kind of intrigue behind it at all.
All right, then. So Khalil's question was about, Leo was included in it, and he asks, what impact do you think, Scott, the late arrival into Japan of assistant coach John Hutchinson and the striker Leo will have on F. Marinos? And also, how much of an impact did the ridiculous schedule of last season have an effect on Ange Ball? So, Hutchinson and Leo are late, arriving late, obviously.
Yeah, I think Sam touched on that in the Kawasaki segment, the second part of that. And I agree as well. Particularly with the constant innovation that is happening, there's an underlying philosophy that never changes, but the application of that, I agree with your changes. And that does require consistent reinforcement, consistent application in training and matches. So absolutely, it had a huge issue. I said to you a lot of times on the pod last year that, as good as Kawasaki were, okay, but the other ACL teams were playing with one arm behind their back for a long part of the season. And if it wasn't like that, I think the season wouldn't have been what we've seen. So that, for obvious reason, that season is going to have an asterisk alongside it. In terms of the late arrival, Leo Ciara / Leonardo, we would think absolutely, because it looks like Anai was going to be the nominal nine to start the season until he does clear quarantine. And that could be, we don't know, 6-8 weeks. We still don't know what's going on with that. So I think absolutely that's going to have an impact. And it's a very good point with the assistant coach as well, because personally, I think at least part of the attribution for the blip last year was the departure of Pete Klimovsky, who had been with Ange, for almost a decade, I guess, as his right-hand man going off to Shimizu. And Arthur Pappas was promoted to the number two last season, and now he's gone as well down to Kagoshima, where I think he's going to do very, very well down there. And apparently they've taken the best goalkeeper at the club, if you listen to them, a guy that they signed from, I think, where was it, Honda or whatnot? I think his name is Shidasaki, who they reckon is going to be probably the starter at Marinos next year, but has gone down to get a bit of experience at Kagoshima this year. So then you face with another situation. So Sean Ontong, Ben, I don't know if you remember, was former captain of the Australian under-20s. The team was there as, I guess, the number three or four last year. He's been bumped up, but then Hutchinson has been brought in, a big name in Australian football, has done, you know, his kind of apprenticeship in coaching, and he's brought in to be the number two. So if you can't have your number two, you know, as you discussed last week with Poyatos at Tokushima, you can't have your number one. That's obviously more of a problem, but you can't have your number two, particularly in the way that Ange wants to play, particularly in a season where you know, there is another radical adjustment to the way that they're likely to play going on. I think that absolutely will have some form of an impact. So I don't know, maybe they start slowly and then, you know, really, yeah, kind of click as the season moves on.
All right. Well, Khalil is definitely a disciple of Ange, so he'll be hoping that, things get a lot better very quickly for F. Marinos, I'm certain. I think we've already kind of answered Naoya's question, how will Ange evolve the team forward tactically to win points more consistently in light of losing some firepower up front? Well, yeah, play six forwards and see what happens. See what happens. Sam, what about Johnny Nichols' question then? So obviously we know that, yeah, Scott's very positive when it comes to Ange Postecoglou, and yeah, fair enough too. I can't argue too much with it. But, well, Johnny asks whether not just simply not being in the ACL this year will elevate F. Marinos back into title contender status, or did the problems run a little deeper last season? I mean, the fixtures were congested for every team. We know that. And, I mean, the busiest part of the season... Sorry, this isn't part of Johnny's question. This is me adding some context. Like, the busiest part of the season F. Marinos had last season, and Tokyo and Kobe had it as well. They played 22 games in 2.5 months. So that's literally every weekend and midweek for 2.5 months. But in that exact same period, Kawasaki played 18 times themselves. So, yes, that is four more games. But every single J1 club had a hectic schedule last year. So to just simply chalk it all down to fixtures being squeezed in for the ACL, well, all fixtures were squeezed last year. So were there much more deep-rooted problems, did you think? Or, is it simply just not being in the ACL this year will free them to express themselves a bit more? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd go as far as deep-rooted problems, but I think the players that played so well in the previous season when they won the league, everyone kind of played to their absolute maximum. I think Marcos Jr. was off last season. I don't think he ever reached the same heights. Nakagara as well, especially, from going from MVP to really didn't get involved too much at all last year. So they need those sorts of players to kind of get back to their levels. Nakagara especially, I think he was one of the biggest disappointments, actually, of last season. Otherwise, like, I don't necessarily think... I think the ACL was still the biggest issue. I think Marinos, more than any team, as I've said before, need to be on the training pitch. They need to be learning this. There was still quite a bit of upheaval at Marinos. They were kind of getting rid of Park Il-Goo just to sort of satisfy ACL quotas, and Edgar Jr. was the same, and it was all a little bit of upheaval. And I think Junior Santos came in. I don't think he really... As good as he did and the goals he scored, I don't think he suited the way that Marinos really wanted to play, which I think is another reason why he's not there this season. So, yeah, I think there were just a little bit of upheaval, the ACL as well, and players not quite to their usual level. So I think as long as they get back to it, the schedule will ease out for them, they'll have more time to prepare. And I think they can only be better this season than they were last year. I think they're a little way off of a title challenge, if I'm being completely honest. I think just because they're going to concede a lot of goals. And I think there are going to be games where they lose 4-3 rather than win 4-3. So I think that will cost them. But I expect them to be up and around the ACL places.
Sam, where have you got them? I've got them third in my little rundown here. Where have you got them?
Yeah, I have them as a tentative fifth. I have them just outside. But yeah, I think there's a collection of teams maybe from third to eighth, which I think, that could all flip around, but yeah, I've got them just outside at the moment.
Who have you got fourth and fifth? You'll probably get through this next week. Just quickly, who have you got fourth and fifth?
Fourth, I've got Nagoya, and I've got Yokohama at fifth. and Tokyo.
So who have you got third then? Oh, Tokyo is third, right?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be exciting, but I think Tokyo are kind of a really reasonably
well-oiled machine. I've got an even less exciting team at fourth.
Oh, who have you going for?
Hiroshima.
Oh.
I think they're going to bore their way right to near the bloody ACL spots, unfortunately.
Well, they're good at that.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll wrap up the F. Marino section with Thomas Pennington's question. You both just told us where you think they'll finish at the moment, of course, with the season still yet to get going. Thomas asks, what would be considered a successful season for Marino's ACL qualification, League Cup win, Scott, if you've got them third, you obviously think they'll probably be within striking distance. So you're probably going to say that it's not out of the realms of possibility that they could win it. But you think ACL qualification is definitely in the cards for them in 2021?
Well, it depends who's making the mark of success. I think for both the support base and I know for the coaching staff, the only mark of success is winning the league. And that's absolutely what they're not hoping to do, but they're absolutely firmly expecting that they're going to do. And I think that is the only it's literally the only measure of success that's acceptable.
All right. Yeah, I do want to finish and move on. But did you have any conversations with Postecoglou throughout the season about, was he extremely frustrated throughout all this, finishing ninth after winning the league the previous year? Or, as I say, are they just trying to forget that it ever happened?
My discussions with a lot of people in and around the club. I think there was a general acceptance come whenever it was September. Or so on, when finally things were in place for the ACL and they were just simply, too far gone to mount any kind of challenge. Then that attention was turned entirely to the ACL. Obviously they still wanted to do what they could in the league, but all the preparation, all the training, all the moves that Sam referenced in terms of players coming and going, all those were done purely with the ACL in mind. And I think that's where the disappointment came, not the league, because, that was a foregone conclusion, months before it actually finished. But I think there was real disappointment anger in the fact that they didn't do what they thought they should in the ACL.
All right, then. Okay, so we will leave it there on F. Marinos. Sure to be a team to watch once again in 2021. We will take a short break, and after a quick hit of music, we'll be back to preview the other three teams in this episode. Welcome back, and we're continuing our tour of the Kanagawa J1 clubs by moving across Yokohama to talk about Yokohama FC, managed by miracle worker Takahiro Shimotaira, who is into his second full season at the club, having taken them up at the end of 2019 in spectacular circumstances. If you need your memory jogged, listeners, he took over after match day 13 in 2019 with the club in 14th place. They finished second in the table, and from match day 19 on, they lost only once, winning 17, drawing 6, and losing just the one game to Kyoto. Then back up in J1 for just the second time in their history, they finished 15th last season, 6 points behind 12th-placed Sapporo and 6 ahead of bottom club Shonan. So I think it's safe to say, Sam, that they outdid expectations. Most of us expected them, at the start of the season when we thought there was going to be relegation, to go straight back down. If there had been relegation last year, or indeed a promotion relegation playoff, they would have been safe finishing fourth bottom. But this season, if they are to finish fourth bottom, that would not be good enough for them.
Yeah, I think Scott mentioned it last year. I think he was one of the few that had them staying up, and he was proven right. I know there was no relegation, but they were a lot better than I expected. And I think if any team benefited from the COVID break, I think it was Yokohama, because they played that first game against Kobe, and it was a lot of the old players played in that game, and they sat back, they didn't really offer anything. But when they came back in July, they allowed the young players to play. They were a lot more expansive. They were really quite refreshing, actually. So I think, and they've kept a lot of those players as well. Yusuke Matsuo was the big one. I think maybe his injury at the end of last season actually helped them keep him on for this season, as he maybe went a little bit under the radar. But yeah, he's still there. They've got Seko and Tezuka, who played very well in midfield. And I think the only issue I have with them really is at the back. They lost Yuki Kobayashi, who went back up to Kobe, and they haven't really replaced him with any sort of quality. But they have added in kind of attacking areas. They've got quite a collection of strikers. Shoito's come in, Kazuma Watanabe.
Quite a collection. That's a fantastic description.
Yeah. Kleber is the interesting one. He got stuck at Jeff, and I don't blame anyone for their career going down the pan when they go to Jeff, because that happens. But he was very highly rated before going there, so maybe he can come in and add some goals. And Kejiro Ogawa is another decent option for them in an attacking position. So I quite like what they've done. Yota Majima as well had a good season at Mito, so he might come in at one of the wing-back positions. So unlike a lot of teams in this sort of position, I don't think they've been drastically weakened by this transfer window. In fact, I think they've got a little bit stronger. So, yeah, I'm quite positive about their chances this season.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention the collection of new forwards. So, yeah, Sam, you've mentioned four of the five. You can throw in Roger Main as well there. And I don't know, Scott, if you add up all of their best bits, you might have one decent player there. But I don't know, yeah, whether they caught wind of Ange Postecoglou's latest tactical revolution and decided they needed to sign as many strikers, as many journeyman strikers as possible. But, yeah, they've lined them up against the wall and decided that they are the five they want. But yeah, also in is one of our old mates, former FC Tokyo, Kobe, and Tosu centre midfielder Hideto Takahashi, he of the White Line Fever fame. While the fullback Maguinho's loan from Kawasaki was extended, how are you sizing up? Well, what they've done in the off season, and then how they're shaping up for their first ever second go round in the top flight.
Their first ever
Well, yeah, that's the first time they've ever had a second go-round, yeah.
That's very good. I think this team is rubbish. I think it's absolutely dreadful. I think they've got two good players. And in fact, if you were given an option from any other club, which players would you take? You can take as many as you want. I think the only ones would be taken are Maguinho, who was one of the 27 revolving doors of right backs that Kawasaki seemed to sign and then never use, which they didn't do this year. And I agree with Sam, Yusuke Matsuo, who's the only really good player they've got. I mean, they've brought in journeyman players or players that were kind of bit part options at other clubs. I mean, Ogawa, okay, maybe he's going to start. I don't know. It looks like it's going to be Ito and Watanabe up front, which is may have been a promising forward line sometime back in the Meiji era. And I think defensively they're poor. I'm not sure that it's a net positive or even neutral in terms of the ins and outs. I think they're fighting with the Vispa Fukuoka to see who finishes bottom. For me, I don't think there's any form of depth, and I just don't think there's the quality, really. If your best players are your left wing and your right fullback, I don't think they're going to keep goals out, and I don't think they're going to score anywhere near enough to stay up. I think they're going down, and I think it's a real shame. I mean, they lost, and I think Nakayama, the right winger. And another exciting player, lost him, Kawayashi, Shichi on the left, like the kind of good young players. And of course, what's his name that went out in the middle of the season as well, Saito went out. So I think of their, they had four or five really promising young players. They've lost all but one of them. And they've replaced them with journeyman. I just don't think it's the right transfer policy. They've still got, this rather obscure thing where, they've got 40 and 50-year-olds on the books and who may get game time. It's just absurd. I don't think it's the right approach. And, I think they're going to go down quite handily.
All right. Well, we didn't actually get any questions from our patrons on Yokohama FC, so we can probably move on from them fairly quickly. Sam, before we move off, Scott's obviously very pessimistic about them. Do you also have them going down in your pre-season table?
No, I think this is an occasion where we're going to differ slightly. I have them staying up. I'm a little bit more positive about them. I get Scott's point completely with the journeyman strikers. I think they're not... If any club brings in Shoito, I don't think they're excited about it. But I think there's just about enough. That bottom of the table is full of dreadful teams, in my opinion. I'm sorry to all the fans of all of them. And I think they're a little less dreadful than a few others. And I think they'll just about... I like the midfield. I quite like in Seko, Tezuka and Yasunaga, who came in towards the end of last season. I think as long as they use that and that still remains as the young kind of vibrant part of the team, I'm quite happy with it. And I think Matsuo kind of won them games on his own at times last season. So they have a player in Matsuo who is like head and shoulders above the squads of most teams in the bottom part of that division. So I think that sort of X factor just about, for me, keeps them safe. I've got them 16th in my table. But again, as I said, there's such a group of teams there that you could just pick four. And they're all deserving to go down. But maybe that's a bit harsh.
All right. Well, so we spent basically 45 minutes on the first two teams, and it looks like we're going to be not able to make it to 10 minutes on Yokohama FC. But
Sam, I've got a question, Sam. What are your three favorite kinds of chocolate? If someone's going to give you like flavors of a chocolate bar.
Flavors of I like anything a bit citrusy and have a bit of orange in there.
All right.
Caramel, bit of caramel, that's all right.
All right.
And then kind of like a nougat. Let's add that in there.
All right. Do you know what Yokohama FC are? They're a vegan chocolate.
Oh dear.
They're just boring. They're boring and bland. Okay, they may be functional, but there's just nothing exciting about them.
I won't argue that.
And I mean, really, where and Matsuo, lest we forget, was injured for whatever the last 3 months of the season, and seems to have been perennially injured throughout his career. Where's the creativity and spark coming from outside of there? It looks like they're going to be this kind of stock standard 4-4-2. Really, outside of Matsuo, where's the creativity? Where's the excitement coming from? It has to come from the wingers, right? So he's one, or the central midfielders. Ogawa is not that player. Matsuura is not that player. And the central midfielders you've done, they're vegan chocolate of the J-League.
Yeah, I won't argue that they're not particularly boring, but functional teams have a tendency to do a bit better than I'd like in the J-League. You see that with Hiroshima all the time. And I'd say Maguinho, you've touched on, I think if they allow him to just go forward, I think he kind of deals with the right-hand side and Matsuo does the rest. Whether the strikers are going to score enough goals, I don't know. But Ogawa, I think if you speak to Kobe fans, he's fairly well liked and he creates things. But yeah, I agree with you. There's not a great deal of creativity here. My positivity on Yokohama doing reasonably well, as in staying up, is based more so on the terrible nature of the rest of the teams rather than me saying this Yokohama team is a fantastic team and they're going to go out and really surprise anyone.
So who have you got going down? I'm probably not going to be on this next week, so can we get this out of the way? Who are your four teams going down, sir?
Yeah, so apologies to the fans of these teams. I've got Avispa, Shonan, Oita and Vegalta Sendai as my four teams to go down.
Okay, so I agree with you on Avispa and Oita, but I've got Yokohama and Vortis going down.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, all part of the great collection of not very good teams.
All right, so yeah, spoiler alert, Sam has a Shonan going down, but we're going to talk about them next, rounding out the quartet of Kanagawa J1 teams. Shonan Bellmare, managed by Bin Ukishima, into his second full season after he took over in late 2019 at the tail end of the whole Chokui J saga. In 2019, they finished 16th and won the promotion relegation playoff, and then finished bottom in 2020. For me, possibly the most noteworthy thing about their off-season is that they no longer play at the BMW Stadium. They now play at the slightly less posh Lemon Gas Stadium. So, it's going to take some getting used to, but, well done to the good people at Lemon Gas for stumping up the cash.
That's another brand of chocolate that you don't want to eat, I'll give you the Lemon Gas chocolate.
Definitely, yeah. So, well done to them for stepping forward and filling the breach. I don't know, Shawnee's a fairly affluent area, but I thought BMW would probably be selling enough cars around there to continue the sponsorship.
Well, there's a new stadium that's been discussed, right, with the local... You live there,
right? Yes, yes.
I believe that, there's been all sorts of discussions with the government in terms of building and constructing a new stadium with some form of investment, so maybe that's why BMW have... Maybe
sponsoring the new stadium, perhaps, Scott. Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, I don't know, maybe it's gas and cars. I don't know, maybe something related. What the hell is Lemon Gas, by the way? What is that?
It's just a gas for your home company.
Oh, right. What, like the
drive around with the big bottles. Yeah, drive around the big bottles. Yeah, fascinating stuff. The old lemon gas. All right. So I think, Scott, they're not in your bottom four at the moment, and a lot of listeners will be surprised to hear that. So rather than, we get Sam's thoughts straight away on how rubbish he thinks they might be, why don't you tell us why you're, obviously more positive, because after they finish bottom in 2020, a lot of pundits will have them definitely as one of their four going down, perhaps not bottom again, but, you're a bit more bullish about them.
Well, I don't think they're going to win the ACL next year, but I don't think they're going to go down. I think they'll have just enough to stay up. I agree that they've lost a lot of key players, but, it happens to them every single year. I mean, Mitsuki Saito departed on loan to Russia, although I saw today that he's actually got quite a serious injury and he might be coming back to rehab that in Japan. I'm not quite sure how long the loan is. So you never know. That injury might be a silver lining in terms of, Ruben Kazan not wanting to perhaps keep him on, and he may end up back with the team, which would be fine. Saka was a kind of functional player for them last year. Toichi Suzuki didn't play as much as I thought he should have. Really big rap for him. He moved on as well. So they lost some key players, but they lose key players. Probably the biggest one a lot was Daiki Kaneko, who actually went across the Reds. But what I think they've done well, and you compare it to, say, Yokohama, is they've got really, really promising young players that they're not afraid to play. So we saw some of these guys have the experience of last year in a season where it didn't count, which was, we'll get into S-Pulse in a minute, but that was what Pete Klimovsky was trying to do at S-Pulse, was trying to expose these younger players to a season where there was nothing on the line, with then the thinking that they'll be better in this season, where not only is there something on the line, but there's double something on the line with four clubs going down. And Belmari did that. So we saw Tanaka and Tatsu start regularly at the back. They seem to be two of the three starting centre-backs heading into this new season. And one of my favourite young Japanese players, Taiga Hata, the left winger / left midfield, I thought had an absolute breakout season. And indeed, I think will be the latest in the line of players to be poached at the end of this current season. But they'll have him for now. And they still have, I think, relative quality in midfield. Shibata, another one of those players that got the experience and the benefit of last year, looks to sit and play at the base of the three central midfielders. Akemi Barada is an experienced player, who also think is quite good enough for this level. And then they brought in, they got more Wellingtons in New Zealand. They brought in Wellington Jr. to play one of those other, 8/10 kind of roles. And then the returning prodigal son, Wellington, up front, who knows, I think in a similar way to Yokohama FC, they've got a collection of fairly modest strikers. Tariq El-Yunusi didn't do what they would have expected him to do, but he stuck around. You would think he's in line to start, perhaps with Wellington, but then you've got, Ishihara floating around and a few other guys. Or Hashi, a young player, we know they got big raps on, was injured for last year, is there and thereabouts as well. But I think the young players that had the experience of playing last year are really going to benefit this year. And I've glossed over my favourite player in the entire team, which is Tani, the young goalkeeper that managed to get back from a second season on loan from Gamba. No doubt he's probably going to go back and take over from Higashiguchi heading into next season, but a little bit more experience at the club this year. So I think they've got exciting young players who've had a year or so of experience under their belt. They've got some kind of seasoned campaigners around that and enough kind of intriguing foreign options relative to what other teams in and around them. I think Oita have got no foreigners, right, at all. There's a couple of clubs in that kind of boat. So, I think they're going to have just enough to stay up.
All right. Sam, you're obviously not as positive.
Yeah, we'll go from good cop to bad cop, I think. I'm not a fan of this team at all. I think the losses of Kaneko and Saito in particular in midfield are just going to be, I think, too great for them to overcome. I agree.
Sam, sorry, can I jump in just there? Because I forgot one player on my list as well, just when you got into central midfield. A player I've got a massive rap for, who they've also got in on loan, is Shintaro Nago.
Yeah.
Who they got in from Kashima. Every time I saw him play at Antlers, he was a fantastic player. Exactly the kind, actually similar kind of player to Saito that they lost. So go on. But I just think they've brought in enough players to kind of cover even the losses. And another fine young player on loan.
I'd agree with you in terms of their recruitment compared to a lot of teams around them. It does look quite positive. It's just I think the net loss, the losses, the players that they've got rid of or had taken away from them, I think a little bit too great. Nago, I agree. I really liked him at Kashima, but he didn't quite fit in for whatever reason at under Zago last season. They're obviously very good players in his role as well at Kashima, so it's difficult for him. He was occasionally kind of bunted to the wing, and so hopefully for him, he can kind of re-establish his career at Shonan. And I think they brought in Shun Nakamura as well from Montedio Yamagata. It was quite a solid, he'd probably take the Kaneko role, but I think it's a downgrade. And I do think that Nago at the moment is a downgrade on Saito, even though he has got the potential. I worry about their strike force, Wellington and Tarek El-Yanoussi. I had such high hopes for El-Yanoussi last year, and he didn't do anything. And him and Wellington, if they played those two up front, there's no movement. There's just Wellington he's had his go in J1. It's never really worked for him. He has okay moments in J2, but yeah, I don't like the look of him. Wellington, the other one, Junior, he looks like he could be a very good player, but again, he's not in the country, I don't believe. So when are they going to get him there? And then he's got to kind of settle in. I think that's another issue. At the back, I don't like it. It's not very good. Oiwa, Ono, Ishihara, they're all much of a muchness. Tachi, I agree, is a good, and Tanaka, I think, are decent players, but they're still, if you're a team relying on 18 and 19 year olds, I don't want to sound like Alan Hansen saying you can't win anything with kids and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I just think the depth isn't quite there. I don't think the quality is quite there. And yeah, I'd still have them as a relegation bound.
All right. Are either of you expecting much from Shuto Machino in from Kitakyushu? Mm-hmm. The extra time boys will be watching on with interest after his 7 goals last season for Giravants. Sam, yeah, where do you think he can fit in, and do you think he can have an impact?
And he could do. I mean, he had quite an interesting season with Giravants. There was a period towards the end of the season, or middle to end, where he kind of lost his place completely, and he was always the one playing second fiddle to Disaro, who's we'll talk about at Shimizu. I don't think they'll see him as the first choice option. I have a horrible feeling we're going to see Wellington and Balls hoofed up to him, so that's not going to kind of satisfy me at all. So I think he's going to be there or thereabouts on the bench, even behind Ishihara. But there is a decent player there coming from Marinos, didn't he? But yeah, I don't expect him to really be setting the world alight, but I'd be happily proven wrong.
Yeah, he was one of the players coming through Marinos that was always kind of highly rated. The other one for me as well is a little bit of a left-foot option. I saw quite a bit in J3 last year is Masaki Ikeda. I think maybe injured at the moment, but he's a kind of versatile wide central midfielder who could also offer them. I think if you look at the teams around them, who've gone in a completely different approach. I think what they're doing is at least curious in bringing in these kind of younger players with potential to improve rather than, kind of journeymen that have got nothing to do but go backwards from a fairly, mediocre base to start with. And I think that kind of combination overall, will be just enough to see them survive.
Yeah, I agree with you. I kind of like the approach. Everyone else has gone really conservative with this 4 relegation. They're worried about it. They're going to maybe go a little bit more defensive. So I do like the approach. I just think maybe this team is maybe a year or two too short to be considered like one that might get into a mid-table. So I think even if they drop into J2, go and then win that and then come back as a better team, I think that might be the way that this team kind of plays out.
All right, so Scott, you're definitely the right person to take care of Eric's question from Patreon. He is a Shonan supporter, and
well, this is not Eric, the former Marinos midfielder.
No, it isn't. Not to my knowledge, anyway. He's a Shonan supporter, but he doesn't share your positivity. So hopefully, you can talk him off the ledge. I mean, Eric's question is basically it's related to the manager. So while you're a fan of their squad building, Scott, do you also think that Ukushima is the right man to keep them up? Eric asks, he says it straight off the bat. For him, Ukushima is a poor manager. He often reacted late to opponents' tactics, and it looks like he doesn't have a plan B. He's often making substitutions after the 75th minute, and Eric thinks that he will take Shonan back down to J2. He's biased, so he's hoping he's wrong. do you think Ukushima is the right man to keep this squad up in J1?
Well, not necessarily, and it wouldn't surprise if they, if they went on a poor run that he was replaced in mid-season. He'd have to be odds on to be one of the first kind of coaches to be moved on. I was a little bit surprised, perhaps, that he stayed on, but I think also part of it was that he was given that mandate last year to bring these younger players through. So, yeah, okay, there may not be the tactical innovation that you see elsewhere, and he's certainly not the most lively interview pre or post match, but. I think in terms of fulfilling what you imagine was the mandate, and that was to give, you know, I mean, we could have, you know, five or six kind of players in the starting 11 who were whatever, you know, 21, 22 or younger. And that would have surely had to have been the plan for last year. He saw it through, and I think in kind of reasonable fashion, whether that's the, you know, the players perhaps elevating things ahead of the tactics, or, you know, or the manager, then the coach, sorry, tactically putting, you know, those things in place to allow the players to do well within the system. But I think he did what he needed to do in terms of blooding them last year. He's going to have them back with that experience now. And you know, we're going to see early on, I think they play Tosu, who probably most people have in and around that scrap as well in the first round. So it's going to be, yeah, a fascinating early test to see how it works. I wouldn't be surprised to see him moved on mid-season, perhaps another foreign signing comes in. But, I just think that it's more about the base of the players that they've got that perhaps can elevate them above Mr. Ukushima.
All right, well, chin up then, Eric. It sounds like it's, it's not all doom and gloom. And, even though Sam does have him have them in his bottom four, he acknowledges that there are enough poor teams down around the foot of the table that there is, still a fighting chance that Shaunan will hang on for another season in J1. And I guess, in a normal 18-team season, if you're suggesting that Shaunan might be able to finish fifth bottom, then you're probably... would be sent off to the funny farm, but in a 20 team J1 with so much dross down at the foot of the table, then I definitely think they have a chance themselves, and I hope they stay up, obviously, as they are the closest team to me geographically. And FC Tokyo playing away at Shonan is the one game I'm let out to every year at this point of proceeding. So Godspeed to Shonan at the Lemon Gas Stadium in 2021,
which sounds like it could be part of the funny
fun. Right, indeed. Yes, most heavily. All right, and Johnny Nicol came in with a question about Shonan as well, and the tail end of that was, is there any reason to believe they'll finish outside the bottom four? Well, if you believe Scott, yes. If you believe Sam, probably not, Johnny. All right, we'll leave that there, because we still have one team left to go, and I have a feeling that we might be spending quite a bit of time on Shimizu S-Pulse, who managed now by Miguel Angel Lotina. He arrives at Nihon Daira after two seasons at Cerezo Osaka. They finished fifth in 2019, and then he took them up a spot to fourth and into the ACL playoffs in 2020. Lotina replaces a combination of Peter Klimovsky and Hiroaki Hiraoka. Klimovsky lasted 25 matches. That saw S-Pulse win three games. Then Hiraoka came in for the final nine games, winning four of them. So, Scott, again, try to get your thoughts earlier about the situation at F. Marinos, because we know you're fairly well connected there. Before we talk about how S-Pulse might be different under Lotina, can you fill us in a little bit about the Klimovsky leaving S-Pulse's situation? I mean, you told us last year, and I'm sure he was obviously under no illusions, that it would take time for his methods to bear fruit, and you suggested perhaps a Postecoglou at F. Marinos style second-year effect might be possible. And with no relegation last year, we all assumed he would see out the year and hopefully really push on in 2021. But as I said, he resigned after 25 matches, pretty much with the end in sight, and giving a telling quote as he walked out the door, "I've given the club everything I've got and had no more to give." So did he Did he fail to realise the scope of what was required to turn the club around? Did he feel the pressure as the man rather than, as you said earlier, he'd spent so much time as Postecoglou's number two? Or did he feel he wasn't supported enough by the club? Or was it just 2020 things? Or was it a combination of all of those?
It's a lot of things to combine, but I think, yeah, most of them hold some grains of truth. I mean, geez, I don't know, if I was a fan of this club, I'd really be wondering what's going on. I mean, you know, they've got a reputation as being the kind of cradle of Japanese football. A lot of fantastic young players have come through the region. Early in the J-League, they were regarded as one of the more flamboyant and the kind of teams in the league, and that's been an identity that they've held on to for a long time, even when it hasn't been, you know, reflected the reality of the way that the team played. Klimovsky was brought in to bring them back to that kind of period. He was told he was going to be back. The week he arrived, they sold their best player to Vissel Kobe, who turned into be a complete lemon gas down at down at Kobe. And they changed sporting director, the guy that brought Klimovsky in. So there's internal power struggles that are going on. He was told he was going to be backed in the transfer market. He wasn't. He was told that that was partly to do because of financial issues around the club's owners to do with Corona. He was let go. And then you look at the moves that they made in this season, which is just not in line with which was what he was told in terms of the players that have come in. We'll get into it in a minute, but they've got some really good players that have come into the club, for this level. Certainly the players that he would have loved to have had, had in last year. And then on top of all that, you've gone from this one identity to a completely, literally a completely opposite identity in Lotina. And the one thing, I don't know if you remember, I told you last year, was what happened with Lotina at Verdy, where the players there did not like the manager. They didn't, the coach. They did not like the rigidity around the way the training was done, and they did not like the rigidity around positional issues within games. And what my understanding is, the exact same thing happened at Cerezo, despite the success, and he was driven out within a year. So have S-Pulse vetted the issues that go on behind the scenes with Lotina, what people perhaps don't see? He's done well in terms of results at Verdy, he's done well in terms of results at Cerezo, but in the past two clubs he's been driven out. And there's reasons, in my understanding, there's reasons why that was. So to go to a coach with this kind of baggage that he's carrying with him, and then to completely reverse course in what you've done before, it's just it's absolutely schizophrenic, and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. Obviously, I'm close with Pete, as you know, and most listeners know, and I think he was harshly treated. I think he's going to be back probably with a J2 club midway through the season, and I think he'll do really, really well. You can't come in with a project that you know is going to take a long time to change, make certain assurances, certain guarantees, have numerous rugs pulled out within you early in the season, and then not back you in the transfer market. I know there was a list of players that he wanted to bring in. They were told that nothing was possible. One of those was Shion Homma, who remarkably Nick Arthur have done really very, very well to hold. I think he's going to be a breakout star in J2, but that's for a separate pod. But yeah, I mean, it's a completely schizophrenic approach. I think it will work in terms of if you want the club to be stabilised and finish 8th to 12th, where they've finished in perpetuity for the last 10 to 12 years, then that's a fine thing. Maybe you'll get them up to 6, I don't know, and then you'll come up with a new direction and a new approach. This is the problem in Japanese football that we've talked about, Ben, ad infinitum for years on the pod, that the club doesn't have an identity, a consistent approach in the way that they want to deal with things. And it's a shame, because it's a beautiful city, the stadium's beautiful, the supporters are nice. But you've got this club just chasing short-term results over a long-term identity, which is what the club was built on. And I think it's a crying shame. Having said that, I think they'll do well in terms of results. I don't think they'll be good to watch. And I think Lotina will be gone within a year or two, and then who knows what they're going to move on to after that.
Well, yeah, I was wondering if there were echoes of Kazamatu Fikadenti at Nagoya for you in terms of, coaching contrast, and it certainly sounds like that is the case. I mean, Sam, Shimizu were one of the teams we talked about in our first episode of the new season, three or four weeks ago now, wasn't it? And, you thought they might do better. It sounds like Scott agrees. And, obviously this... literally, 100% U-turn in terms of, philosophy, etc., with Latina coming in. How do you think they've done in the window? And maybe you can touch on a question or two that we got from our patrons as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a short-term fix, I think this is perfect. I think they've invested. Their defence is so much better than the players that they had last season. They've brought in an exciting player up front in Thiago Santana. I really like Nakayama, who we mentioned at Yokohama.
Me too.
Disaro, obviously, I think he'll be second fiddle to Thiago Santana and Carlinhos, but a very decent backup striker as well. So I think what they've done is very good. I am disappointed as a neutral that wants to watch good football in Shimizu S-Pulse, but this wasn't a Klimovsky team that had this sort of backing, went out to get whatever players he wanted, because, it would be a really exciting team this season. I don't know. I think they've looked short-term and thought, there's four relegation spots here. We need to survive. Who's the best manager to do that? It's probably Latino who's available. And I think they will do well. I think they'll be mid-table. I don't know if... I think short-term, great. Long-term, I worry a little bit that they might just drop back to where they have been and fighting off relegation. But, the signings are really good. William Mateus, I think, will eventually, when he gets in the country, be another good signing at left-back. So, I think... in terms of any team, in terms of business, I think they've probably done the best. But, Lotina, just the way he dealt with players like Souza at Cerezo Osaka, where he took the life out of the team in midfield by getting rid of Souza, it's not necessarily what I want to see, but I think it'll work at least for this season.
So they're going to play worse football, but they're going to get better results, I guess, is the... worse on the eye, sorry, than obviously what Klimovsky was trying to implement. So we did get a couple of Patreon questions. So Gabriel Anello, are they going to be the biggest winners from 2021? Gab can see them ending in the top half with Latina and all the good acquisitions they've made. So I don't know, Scott, from last season's bottom six, Tosu, Kobe, Yokohama FC, Shimizu, Sendai and Shonan, are they the only one of those... set of six clubs that you could see possibly finishing in the top half, or do you also think Kobe are capable of that?
Well, I've told you I've got the 1 to 20 perfectly mapped out already, Ben, and I've got them slotted in 10th. Sam, where have you got them?
I've got them 12th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think, as Sam said, the signings have been... I mean, this is what Pete wanted to do. He wanted to bring in players who he's told he couldn't. And I've seen some of the players that were suggested to him to bring in. And I tell you, it makes Yokohama FC look like a modern kind of progressive kind of club. I mean, they were just ridiculous options that were being presented to him. And now you've got this new guy come in with this completely ridiculous, different approach to what the club said they wanted 12 months ago. And you've got players that he would have loved to have. I know for a fact that he and I have both been a really big fan of Teruki Hara for a long time. I don't think he'll start, but, geez, as a versatile player, he can play centre back, he can play right back, he can play central midfield. He's an exceptional young player. You brought him in, you brought Gonda in, you brought Disaro as one of the best players in J2 last year. You brought Katayama with you, again, a versatile player who can play all these different kind of roles. You brought a good Brazilian striker in Santana, you brought a left back in Mateus. You got Suzuki, one of the better defenders in the league last year, I think, at Oita, fantastic player as well. So you've got these brilliant, really, signings for this level. In terms of transfer business, I agree with the question. I think they're one of the best in the entire league, if not the best, from where they were to where they are. So I don't understand. I just completely don't understand what's going on at the club at all. But in terms of results, there's no question that they're going to be improved. But it's a false kind of improvement, because is this who you want to be? No, it's not what the club was built on. It's not what the club's supporters identify with. And that was a large part of the reason why he was driven out of Cerezo as well, because Morishima You know, he still has the banner of himself as a player up in the background, who's now the head honcho, basically running the club. He came out and said, this is not who we are. He said, we thought we were getting someone different with the identity that we were built on to play attractive, you know, attacking football. And they got rid of a guy that almost qualified him, did qualify him through to the ACL, because they didn't like what he brought to the club. And the players didn't buy into it, as was the issues at Verdi. Again, Verdi, another storied club built on these kind of traditions. So you've gone from a club built on this tradition to this tradition to this tradition, and at each one you've been driven out, yet he's still come in here. I mean, where's he going to end up at Frontale next year? I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's completely schizophrenic, and it's a real shame and a real disappointment that this club has only looked for short-term solutions when they should be looking to tap into the identity that 12 months ago they told us they were going to tap into.
All right. Well, yeah, sounds like a real conundrum there for Espol supporters. You're going to be better off in terms of your finishing position, and by the sounds of the two guys, yeah, you won't have to worry too much about a relegation battle in 2021. But yeah, in terms of the football you get to watch, and in terms of the future of the club, footballing wise, it doesn't sound particularly rosy. But I don't know. Yeah, it depends at what sort of a supporter you are, I suppose. If you're results first, then you'll be happy to finish the 10th or 12th, and not have to worry about relegation. But yeah, the Nihon Daira faithful, they do love to get entertained and to bang their samba drums. So yeah, I wonder if things are a bit drab. We might start to hear a little bit of rumblings below the surface, as Scott said, it seems to happen at every other stop Latina's made in Japan. So we'll see how it goes. And Naoya, I think we've kind of organically answered your question on the Espol. So will Latina's football resemble the deliberate approach he championed at Cerezo? Sounds like an absolute yes. Leopard doesn't change its spots, does it? And will the toys purchased for him by the front office gel quickly enough for an upper table finish? Well, yes, Scott has them just top half in 10th, and Sam pretty close in 12th. So, if there isn't any other business on these five clubs then, gents, I think we can just about leave it there. And
we could do them in chocolate flavours, each club.
Or, yes.
I could nominate Shimizu as a nut, some kind of nut flavour, perhaps.
Yes. Particularly hard nut to crack, maybe? I don't know.
That's it.
Yes. Well,
kind of smooth.
Oh, there you caramel. Go. I'm actually not a huge fan of caramel myself, but no.
Really?
I'm pretty happy with the Kit Kat, Scott. I'm pretty happy with the Kit Kat. She's right. Yeah, yeah.
See, that is Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah.
That is just like a plain Kit Kat.
Mate, we live in Japan. There's dozens of flavors of Kit Kat. This is the perfect place.
But Tokyo is the plain one. Like, just bland. It's been the way it was since 60 years ago.
Mate, it's utterly delicious. Nothing bland at all about it.
No, that's why they came out with new flavors.
Well, I don't know. Sam, do you want to sit through Scott's 1 to 20? I'm kind of intrigued, I must be honest.
Yeah, we'll go for it. Is this the second edition to...
Unless you want to invite me back next week to go through the Kansai clubs and enjoy it. That'll be like a 10-hour episode. I'll go 20 to 1. 20, Obispo Fukuoka, 19, Yokohama FC, Oita and Tokushima, relegated. Close to relegation, Belmare, Sendai, Tosu and Sapporo, who, in terms of inverted commas, at big clubs, I think they could really struggle. Mid-table, Urawa, Kashiwa, Shimizu, Cerezo, and Gamba, who I am absolutely not convinced are anything to do with the coach at the club, but rather a collection of players. Just missing out on the top slots, Kobe, the Kit Kat, plain variety, FC Tokyo. Nagoya, who I think have got a fine squad, but I think will struggle also with the ACL. And then the top four, Hiroshima, Marinos, Frontale, and Kashima, who I think are going to be very, very hard to stop this year.
All right. Is that markedly different to yours, Sam?
Bottom seven are all the same teams. We've already touched on the top four. I've got Kawasaki, Kashima, FC Tokyo, and Nagoya. And then, yeah, everyone else is kind of much of a muchness. There's nothing dramatically different between our tables.
All right. A little bit surprised to hear Hiroshima as high as fourth in yours, Scott. But, yeah, what do you think? They're just going to bore their way past enough teams?
Exactly what I said. Yeah, because I'm scratching the Osaka club's ACL, the same for Grampus. Frontale, a little bit of a different case, and I think they're going to be the big beneficiaries of moving above those yeah, above those ACL clubs.
All right, so you think Cerezo are actually going to care about the ACL this time?
No, but I think they're going to be a team in flux, particularly all these kind of late flurry of defensive losing Matthew Jonjic is a hammer blow. Sam's a massive fan. I'm a massive fan. As well, and replacing him with some combination of Dunkler and somebody else. I'm not quite sure. That's an upgrade. As well as the fact that they're now undergoing again a tactical transformation. This is all the pod for next week, but with the return of the previous magician. Who's going to bring them more magic, unlike the return of the magician at Sendai, is going to bring them more heartbreak. It's going to be a transition. And, if they do get through the playoff and have to deal with the ACL as well, I think they're going to struggle to maintain what they did last year. I think Hiroshima are going to sneak up upon people. They're going to be match day 32 and there Hiroshima are up in second or third and, they'll slip back a few spots and end up fourth.
All right, Dan. Well, fascinating stuff then with the five clubs that we've previewed on this episode. If you've been paying attention at home, that leaves us with just five teams left then to preview before Kawasaki and the Yokohama F. Marinos kick off match day one on Friday, the 26th of February. Those five clubs are centred on the three Kansai clubs, Cerezo Osaka, Gamba Osaka and Kobe, with Nagoya to the east and Hiroshima to the west. So we'll be chatting about them.
North and south, Ben. North and south.
Indeed. Well, most heavily, yes. So we'll be chatting about them in next week's episode. So thanks to Johnny Nicol, Thomas Pennington, Stuart Woodward, Gabriel Anello, Naoya Kanai, Khalil Kayal, and Eric for their questions. And, more importantly, thanks to you, Scott McIntyre, for joining us again. It was an absolute pleasure.
Was great fun. I never know where these things are going to veer off into, but I'm going to go eat some chocolate later on tonight.
Yes, some lemon gas chocolate will go down very nice indeed, I'm sure. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Scott McIntyre for his time on this episode. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to wrap up our J1 season previews before the big kickoff. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
Boom, 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 boom.
Scott, whatever happened to love in the times of Corona?
I was just thinking that literally in the outro. That's exactly what I was thinking. Whatever happened. And Lotina was involved in that romantic plot as well.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.